Welcome aboard, dear listeners, to the latest installment of Virtual Memories Radio. I'm the only voice you get this time around, but I promise our next episode will include another one besides mine. I'm going to be at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival this weekend. I'm planning to get some interviews in, provided I can get over my anxiety about actually approaching someone and conducting an interview with them. Anyway, it was a Life Imitates Art kind of weekend. On Friday, we had the romantic comedy pageantry of that royal wedding. And on Sunday, as it turns out, we had the action movie Commando Attack to kill Osama bin Laden. And in between, there was an art house foreign movie event. Ernesto Sabato, a famous Argentine author, died at the age of 99. Now, I never read Sabato. A pal gave me a copy of On Heroes and Tombs a bazillion years ago, but I haven't cracked the cover till now. All I know about Sabato comes from reading Cultural Amnesia. Now, that's this awesome book by Clive James. It consists of these short essays inspired by a line of writing or commentary from people he's read over the years. The books organize alphabetically by the name of the person he's quoting, and they're about 107 chapters, at least last time I counted. Sometimes the essays are biographical sketches, but other ones fly pretty far afield. The one inspired by Thomas Brown, for example, it's less about Thomas Brown and more about the art of coming up with a really good title for a book. See, Brown came up with Urn Burial, and that just sets Clive James off for a riff. Now, Sabato does get his own essay in the book, but I haven't gotten that far yet. I've only read him in the context of an essay on Borges. See, to James, Borges commits the cardinal sin of trying to divorce his art from the imminent world. Or maybe that's too broad. James accuses Borges of being deaf to the screams of Argentina's torture chambers, both figuratively and literally. And he positions Sabato as the great Argentine artist who remains engaged politically, or at least reflects the ongoing horror of his world, rather than writing Gnostic intellectual exercises like Borges does. But that's enough preamble. Here's a page of Clive James' Borges essay. At this point, there's a key quotation from Ernesto Sabato that we should consider. From Borges' fear of the bitter reality of existence spring two simultaneous and complementary attitudes, to play games in an invented world and to adhere to a Platonic theory, an intellectual theory par excellence. In Buenos Aires after World War II, there were two literary voices of incontestable international stature. The main difference between them was that only one of them was known to possess it. The whole world heard about Borges. But to get the point about Sabato, you had to go to Argentina. Both inhabitants of a beautiful but haunted city, both great writers, and both blind in their later lives, Borges and Sabato were linked by destiny, but separated in spirit. A separation summed up in the single perception of Sabato's, which was penetratingly true. Borges did fear the bitterness of reality, and he did take refuge in an invented world. When Gombrowicz called Borges' virtuosity iced fireworks, he was arriving independently at the same judgment. There are no iced fireworks in Sabato, whose fantastic novels were dedicated to including all the horrors of the real world and raising them to the status of dreams, so that they could become apprehensible to the imagination, which would otherwise edit them into something more easily overlooked. His rationale for this process of saving reality from its own forgetful mechanisms is spread throughout his books of critical prose, but see especially El Escritor y sus Fantasmas. Sabato's characteristic image is the tunnel. The tunnel is the area of concentration for the dreams. Most of the dreams we recognize all too clearly. He doesn't need to search very far in order to find the stimulus for them. All he needed was a recent history of Argentina. In Sabato, the reader is faced with that history often, but in Borges, hardly ever. In Borges, the near past scarcely exists. In that respect, his historical sense, like his Buenos Aires, is without contemporaneity. His political landscape is a depopulated, marble ghost town remembered from childhood, spookily hieratic, like the cemetery in Recoleta. Before he went blind, he would still walk the streets, but usually only at night, to minimize a chance of actually meeting anyone. In his stories, the moments of passion, fear, pity, and terror belong to the long-vanished world of the knife fighters. Death squads and torture are not in the inventory. The timescale ends not long after he was born. Why did he hide? And that, dear listeners, was Clive James. What's that? You wonder what Sabato's writing is like? Well, I did read the first 30 pages or so of On Heroes and Tombs this weekend. I liked it, but I wasn't in love enough to commit to it. I have a new month's Anthony Pohl novel to read, and I also decided to dive into Lampedusa's novel, The Leopard, before I get to that. But I did pull out a nice passage for you guys from Sabato, from On Heroes and Tombs, and I'll read it to you now as mangled by my allergy-ridden voice. Alejandra's face was almost the exact replica of Georgina's, of course. The same black hair with reddish glints framing it, the same gray-green eyes, the same large mouth, the same Mongolian cheekbones, the same pale, matte skin. But that almost was unbearable. So subtle and so nearly imperceptible that it made the illusion all the more profound and all the more painful. For it is true that bones and flesh are not enough to constitute a face, he thought, and that is why it's infinitely less physical than the body. It is characterized by the look in the eyes, the expression of the mouth, the wrinkles, by all that conjunction of subtle attributes whereby the soul reveals itself by way of the flesh. This is the reason why, when somebody dies, his body is at that very instant suddenly transformed into something different, so different that we say he doesn't seem like the same person, despite his having the same bones and the same envelope of flesh as a second before that mysterious moment when the soul abandons the body, which thereupon lies there as dead as a house, when the beings who inhabit it, who above all suffered and loved each other in it, leave it forever. For it is not the walls, nor the roof, nor the floor that give a house its unique character, but rather those beings who bring it alive with their conversations, their laughter, their loves and hates, beings who impregnate the house with something immaterial yet profound, with something as far removed from the material as is a smile on a face, even though this something is expressed through the intermediary of physical objects, such as carpets, books, or colors. For although the pictures we see on the walls, the colors in which the doors and window frames have been painted, the figures in the carpets, the flowers in the rooms, the records and books are all material objects, as lips and eyebrows are corporeal, they are nonetheless manifestations of the soul, since a soul is unable to manifest itself to our material eyes save by way of matter. And this is part of the soul's fragility, but at the same time, one of its curious subtleties. And that was a little of Ernesto Sabato's On Heroes and Tombs. Apparently, he had a tendency to torch his manuscripts, so he only published 3 novels in those 99 years of his. But in addition to his writing career, he did preside over the investigation into crimes by the military junta that ran Argentina from 1976 to 83. Oh, and he was a physicist and a painter. I, meanwhile, am dicking around with a podcast and not writing so much, so I'm going to go back to self-pity and anxiety, and I'll catch you later. Oh, I forgot. This week's music is One Big Love by Patty Griffin. Enjoy.